Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Press the number one to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search. Type in We Talk Productions and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, blind loyalty to Democrats. Why do Democrats receive the majority of the black vote? Do they deserve their loyalty and political commitment? Have Democrats been that good to black people? Have Republicans been that good to black people? This is a question that I've been pondering lately. The question easily answered if there were no racism in the United States of America. But we'll take a look at it from the Daily Signal. More Republicans voted for the Civil Rights Act as a percentage than Democrats did. So, you know, how percents work out, right? They say, Ben Shapiro guy, he claimed on some podcast that more Republicans voted for the Civil Rights Act as a percentage than Democrats did. They said that it's true. While the Landmark Act received a majority support from both parties, the greater percentage of Republicans voted in favor of the bill. So, throughout the 1950s and 60s, Republicans were generally more unified than Democrats in support of the civil rights legislation, as many Southern Democrats voted in opposition. Key word here is Southern Democrats, right? That means Northern Democrats voted for the bill, or many, right? More, whatever. It distinguishes Southern Democrats from Northern Democrats and identifies a lack of unity in the Democratic Party. So this thing about the Republicans doing these filibusters and being united on whatever you think they want to be united on, that's not even a new thing. They just have always been more, I guess, organized in the Democrat Party. More unified, right? Anyway, many of the Southern Democrats appear to maintain the old values and ideas about the equality of black people as far as citizenship and constitutional rights are concerned, right? It is evidence that the North and the South continue to have division on the topic of the rights of how to deal with black people, right? Remember, the South was predominantly Democrat during the Civil War. From vote view, it says the Democrat Party at its inception was against central government power, including the abolishment of the Bank of the United States as its key platform. It was not sympathetic towards Native Americans, and it was opposed to this abolition of slavery, right? So those abolitionists were unwelcome folk in the South, right? And why wouldn't they be? I'm running my place, or I'm forcing these black folks to work for me, and somebody coming, talking about freeing them. So economically, I'm supposed to be against that, right? Ethically, I should never have slaves, period. Moral and ethically speaking, right? In the run-up to the Civil War, the party became sharply divided between the Northern and Southern Democrats. So that's how you get this imbalance back then. So no surprise to me. So, you know, they chit-chatted about what, you know, time period was he talking about. He was talking about the Civil Rights Act of 1964, in which... Democrats were, 1956, many Southern members of Congress signed the Southern Manifesto, voicing their opposition to the ruling in the 1954 Supreme Court case, Brown versus the Board of Education. Right? Y'all know about that, which declared that they desegregated the schools and stuff like that. It's unconstitutional. You had these desegregated schools. This is unconstitutional. Democrats were geographically divided on matters of the civil rights. You can guess geographically how they were divided, right? Republicans largely represented non-Southern states and were unified. So the Republicans got to think about being united, unity, too. And we can see that. But I can't see, well, I'm not going to get into that. So that was referral, Mr. What's his name? Shapiro, you know, was referring to the 1964 Civil Rights Act. The bill received 102 yay votes from Democrats, or 60% of their party, and 138 votes from Republicans, or 78% of their party. So that's really not really, okay, it's more, but it's not nothing for you to be riding the town on a white horse on, right? Because you got, you know, what is this, 32% saying nay of the Republicans, right? So you do have some Republicans that's not feeling it, right? In the Senate, the bill faced strong organized opposition from Southern Democrats, right? And this is not during slavery. You're talking about 1964. And you see, this thing was going on since the Civil War, right? Before the Civil War, after the Civil War, this whole thing with these Southern Democrats. So it's something about those Southern Democrats that makes them feel a certain way. Wonder what that thing is. Anyway, they're going to talk about these guys. Russell, Democrat from Georgia, had one point argued the bill would lead to destruction of the South's two different social orders and result in the amalgamation and mongrelization of our people. Our people would be the mongrelization of white folks. Right, mixing with the race mixing they're talking about, right? So, hey, you don't want to mix with them. You don't want to mix with somebody, don't mix with them. You don't need a law for that. But anyway, these guys know that nature is going to take its course, yada, 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 right? After some changes were made to the bill, and they had a filibuster, it passed the Senate with a 73-23 vote. About 82% of Republicans in the Senate voted for the bill, as did 69% of the Democrats. The amended state bill was then sent back to the House, where it passed with 76% of the Republicans and 60% of the Democrats. Right? Civil Rights Act of 1964, right, from Wikipedia, right? Democrats and Republicans from the Southern states opposed the bill. Democrats and Republicans from the Southern states opposed the bill. Just so you, because I know people might think it's just a Democrat thing, because Democrats were predominantly in the South. But not so. You are who you are, right? The bill had led to an unsuccessful 60 working day filibuster, right? Including Senators Albert Gore Sr. I know that guy, right? His son, right? You know, that's his daddy. And this other guy who... Senator Robert Byrd, I don't know him. William Fulbright, they're all Democrats, right? They had this filibuster. They like, we ain't doing nothing. That's like a political sit-in. Back to the fact check. A number of powerful Democrats, such as President Lyndon Baines Johnson and Senate Majority Leader Mike Mansfield, played important roles in getting the legislation passed, right? You know, I think Kennedy first introduced it, and then something happened to Kennedy on national television, and unfortunately he was assassinated in front of the whole world, which is ridiculous for a president, somebody to be able to do that to a president. Anyway, went to the same old kind of rigmarole. These Republicans, it's these Southern guys that are holding it back. Basically, whether they're Republican or Democrat, right? They blame it on a lot of the holding back on the Democrats for some reason, but they're both of them, as previously stated, Democrats and Republicans. But they're from the South, right? It might be some Northern guys that got in there, but I guess the South got most of the attention. That's what I'm thinking, because maybe there's a whole bunch of them from down there. So they got to pass the Civil Rights Act of 1968, also known as the Fair Housing Act, right? 68% support from Democrats and 87% support from Republicans. It's interesting, which is people, you know, which is, I guess, Shapiro's point. Man, look at this. Everybody's against the Republicans nowadays, and but we have percentage-wise supported, assist black folk more than Democrats. So Shapiro had a point there, but he left out one point about his point. I don't know if he did or not because I didn't even watch the show. But as I said, it was racism that motivated Southern Democrats and some Republicans, right, to oppose the Civil Rights Bill. It had nothing to do with political party. Southern Democrats and Republicans are who they are first, in this case, racist, and who they chose to be second, Democrat or Republican or whatever party, right, mayor, whatever, you know, position they might hold. They are, you are who you are internally first. I don't care what nobody says. Suit, a police uniform, you are racist in a police uniform. Same thing for the military. Judge, attorney, you name it, doctor, things like that, right? For the record, political party does not reveal how racist an individual is or isn't. How many Democrats that support the Civil Rights Bill had nothing to do with how Southern white America felt about black people, what they feared about black people? It is indicative of how white Southern Americans felt about black people on the issue of civil rights, human rights, and proximity. Anyone know that black stuff to rub off on them? You know how it is. So, you know, you might get some black on you. I guess, I don't know. The country remained largely segregated, right? And black people continue to be systemically disenfranchised politically, socially, and economically, right? Jim Crow lasted well into the 60s, as you can see. Jim Crow started before the Civil War, before the end of the Civil War. Understand that. It started in the North. Some people don't know that. I think the guy, what's the boy named Charleston White, I was always saying about welfare was the Democrats' way of keeping black folks down. I wish it was that simple. If welfare is mentioned, it's a method of keeping black people down by the slave masters' descendants. Are white people on welfare being kept dependent by their white slave masters too? I say it takes more than welfare to oppress someone. Availability of viable life-sustaining and enhancing resources might have something to do with it. Capitalism is a hungry beast too. From the new USDA report provides pictures of who participates in SNAP. SNAP, you know, as you get the welfare, right? TANF and all that stuff, right? Citizens represent different races and ethnicities. White are 37%, African American 26%, Hispanic 16%, Asian 3%, Native American about 2%. So blacks are less than 13% of the population. Whites are about 60% or more of the population. The question is, why are black people so disproportionately represented in the welfare system? Is welfare keeping people, black people dependent, or is there something else? Something else like barriers to employment, education, resources, poverty. It's probably a symptom of or byproduct of capitalism, racism, or any other kind of ism. Welfare is supporting people when they cannot or do not earn a living wage. Welfare supporting a family is indicative of the family not getting the economic support from employment or the economic system. Those that do receive a living wage are able to have their welfare cases closed or never have a need to apply for welfare. Welfare is a crutch for people whose social economic condition is broken. There are many people who have been on welfare who are not on welfare now. Constitutional Right Foundation says, in 1909, President Theodore Roosevelt called a White House conference on how to best deal with the problem of poor single mothers and their children. Isn't that nice? The conference declared that preserving the family in the home was preferable to placing the poor in institutions which were widely criticized as costly failure. That sounds like some stuff today. Anyway, so basically it's cheaper to support families at home and maybe safer. They say costly failures, right? They fail, right? Starting with Illinois in 1911, the Mother's Pension Movement sought to provide state aid for poor fatherless children who would remain in their own homes, cared for by their mothers. Poor single mothers would be excused from working outside the home. These bums, huh? Look at these bums. That's why these black people aren't able to do anything, because they're just being encouraged to stay at home and raise their children. They said that the state pensions will also prevent juvenile delinquency, since mothers would be able to supervise their children full time. So they value family here. They value parenting. They value supervising your child. The more you supervise your child, they put a value on that, even for poor mothers. In 1933, mothers' pension plans were operating in all but two states. The mothers' pensions mainly benefited families headed by white widows. These programs excluded large numbers of divorced, deserted, and minority mothers and their children. Few private and government retirement pensions existed in the United States before the Great Depression, right? The prevailing view was that individuals should have saved for their old age or be supported by their children. How can you do that if you're not earning a living wage? Anyway, so welfare was viewed as a method of supporting white families where the father was absent. Mother's pension program was provided to prevent juvenile delinquency, since mothers would be able to supervise their children at home, teach them, give them ethics and morals, right? Train the child in the way he should go, so that when he grows up, he shall not remember the Bible like that. Note, black people are excluded from this support, and it was considered good, right? Democrats and Republicans, I say, take what you can use from either party. Don't worry about what party someone belongs to. Be concerned about what they offer you, Democrat or Republican. Be advised that there are racist Democrats and Republicans, and racism trumps political party unless the political party supports racism. The bottom line. People need their own political party that is dedicated to representing black people. Good luck with that. From Princeton, EDU, African Americans are Democrats. Since 1968, no Republican presidential candidate has received more than 13% of the African American vote. Survey says African Americans regularly show up. Words of 80% of African Americans self-identify as Democrats. So since 1968, what the hell happened? What scared them all into the Democrat Party? That's why you can't worry about party thinking. The Democrat Party was the party of the South, held their ancestors in captivity. But the Republican Party also held ancestors in captivity subjected them to Jim Crow also. All right, so I know we got this thing about the freeing of slaves and the Republicans, you who they fought this war, white folks was dying, free these slaves up in the South. But it's not really the case. I mean, it looks that way. historically recorded that way. But if you read the history book that's actually recording history, you'll see why the war was really fought. The only research, I'll probably go into a little bit of later on. Anyway, when African-American men first obtained the right to vote after the passage of the 15th Amendment in 1870, nearly all identified and supported the Republican Party and its candidates, rewarding the party of Lincoln for his commitment to ending slavery and expanding black civil rights. So I get that, right? So, I mean, anything is better than a man waking you up in the middle of the night, screwing your woman, maybe your baby or something like that, maybe trying to screw you, telling you to work all day, cutting off your foot because you try to run away, whipping you to damn near to death, butt breaking you and all that kind of nonsense. So anything is better than that they was doing in the North, I guess. Or they just had to risk being lynched, whipped, and you know, and all that stuff, murdered up there. I don't know. But it seems like, I guess you had a better chance of running away up North. I don't know. But I can get it. That's better than slavery. That's how bad slavery was. In the North, the Democratic Party, through its commitment to organized labor, would for the first time begin to make inroads with black voters. This is the Democrat Party. The Northerners, right? The slick ones figured out how to utilize these black guys, citizens. So we could use them. Despite this, many African Americans, both North and South, maintained commitment to the Republican Party because it's too close to the Revolution, the Civil War. These guys, you know, got their legs shot off, their heads shot off. You know, for us, that's what they're thinking, right? And well, it's the result of that. They got their legs and heads shot off, killed people for them. So they were free as a result of all that happening to them. So they had great, great gratitude to the Republican Party. I get it. Abe Lincoln, you know, head of the Republican Party at that time. It was only when the Democrat Party took up the mantle of civil rights in the mid-60s that black support for the party coalesced into the reliable Democratic voting bloc we now see today, right? So in the 60s, now we get into JFK, that brother that was, the white brother that was murdered on television in front of the whole world in broad daylight. Lyndon Baines Johnson signed it, you know, after he died, he took over. He was a Southern Democrat, right? Still got that scenario going on, right? So for nearly 50 years, black Americans have been able to remain unified in their support for the Democrat Party, because now we got another group of black folks who is getting the S kicked out of them by white folks, dogs being sucked on them, fire hose, beaten, called boy, called the N-word, got to go in the back, sit on the back of the bus, which is ain't new. Rosa Parks wasn't the first person not to give up her seat. This thing happened back in 1800s up North. And I'm not taking nothing from Rosa Parks, because you still got to be brave to do that back in the time she did it, because lynching and killing a black person, you can get away with that pretty much so, right? It seems like people get away with it right now. Anyway, since the 1960s, there's always been significant growth in both the black middle and upper classes, and perhaps even more interesting, substantial divisions of black political views. Since the 1960s, blacks have become increasingly more moderate and even conservative on a number of important political issues, including certain racial policies. Why haven't these changes resulted in an opportunity for Republicans to gain support from African Americans? Supporting the Democrat Party has come through as just something you do as a black person. That's very important right here. An expectation of behavior meant to empower the racial group. So if you black, you expected to be a Democrat. You wouldn't dare be a Republican, because more recently the Republicans was openly putting a foot in, you know what I'm saying? happen on national television. You know, police, dogs, and all of that stuff, right? Just tearing up black people up, right? So, seems like the Northern Democrat Party was the party that did something for black folks fleeing the tyranny of the South slave culture and later Jim Crow, not the North. Not that the North didn't have Jim Crow first. And why didn't the North, why wouldn't the North have Jim Crow first, right? Because they were the first to have black folks walking around as free people. South didn't even have to worry about that, right? Got to keep those N-words in check. Wouldn't want them thinking they can become neighbors, sons-in-laws, or presidents one day. You know what I'm saying? From time. The forgotten Northern origins of Jim Crow was covered by Time. Right? You can check it out. You don't have to take my word for it. Do your own research. Jim Crow did not originate in the South. Started in the North, they said, right? Now, read all of this. Just telling you. This guy researched it back to a story of Plessy versus Ferguson, America's journey from slavery to segregation, that the impetus of the separating of the races was a Northern one. The first reference to a Jim Crow car that I could find in a newspaper, aided by the 21st century power of digitized database. So somebody took pictures of it and they salvaged it, right? The Salem Gazette, October 12, 1838. This is before Rosa, right? Less than 6 weeks after a new Eastern Railroad opened for business on 13 and a half miles of freshly laid track from East Boston to Salem, Massachusetts, right? This is the first case, right? Separation. The word universally used in the 19th century had no place in the South before the Civil War. Why? Because slavery required close contact, coercion. I'm beat the hell out of you if you somewhere else. So, right? Intimidation, intimacy in order to survive and dominate. Right? You right there. I need you to pick this bag up. Put it right there. Right? So, somebody's looking at that. Right? It was the free but conflicted North that gave birth to separation. They ain't conflicted at all. They never said they loved or trusted black people or anything like that. They just needed the South not to have that power or not to separate, right? Anyway, in different places, in different forms, right? They had it all kinds of ways, right? At the dawn of the railroad age in the late 1830s, the South had no use for Jim Crow because they had legalized slavery. Do what you want to do. They can control them. Right? You don't separate yourself from your property. There were no free blacks running around town. And if there were, he was probably at risk of becoming a slave or being lynched. Not a good look. The good old North wasn't exactly black folks' best friend. It was more like the lesser of two evils. The South was so bad, the North was attractive. It was more attractive. That's where it went. From Time, the forgotten origins of Jim Crow. They went on to say, in 1855, a New York jury awarded $250 was a lot of money in 1855, just so you know, because you might be listening now. $250, dang, that's a lot of money back then, especially for a black person. They awarded $250 in damages to a passenger, Elizabeth Jennings, after the judge ruled that colored persons, if sober, well-behaved, and free of disease, had the same rights as others on a city streetcar. Ain't that nice? Ain't that a nice judge? In 1858, a Michigan Supreme Court ruled against black abolitionist William Howard Day, refusing for, he sued a Michigan steamboat company for refusing to sell him an overnight cabin. So where would he be sleeping there? On a deck somewhere? On the side of a boat? In one of the lifeboats or something? Where he went the man? This is interesting. Anyway, in 1867, after the Civil War, teacher Mary Miles refused to sit in the color-only section of a streetcar on the Westchester and Philadelphia Railroad. After succeeding in the lower court, she won her case. It went to the Supreme Court where the judge, Daniel Agnew,
declare a right to separate, a precedent setting ruling often cited later by other state courts and by the U.S. Supreme Court in Pulaski. You get it? All right, so Black Americans have come to prioritize group solidarity in party politics. I mean, that is kind of what like we need to do, but it's the part missing. It's a big thing, big thing missing there. Group solidarity. Nothing wrong with group solidarity. I'm not even going against that, right? This partisan loyalty is maintained through strategic social process that we call racializing social constraint, where by support for the Democrat Party, one has come to be defined as a norm of group behavior. It's saying it's normal for blacks to support the Democrat Party. Those guys was helping us through the civil rights movement. Those Democrats, they worked for us, right? They helped us, right? So in other words, supporting the Democrat Party has become to be understood as just something you do as a black person, an expectation of behavior meant to empower the racial group. So that must be a psychological empowerment. Maybe Biden read this article too, and that is why he stated, if you don't vote for me, you're not black, which is stupid, especially coming from a white man. Fact is, if you vote for someone who does not, will not support you, you are stupid. There is another presidential election coming up in 2024. I think it's 2024. Black people will have a chance to make a statement or respond to Biden's betrayal, or must I go on about the open border illegal immigrant situation? Do I need to keep rapping about how nothing is being done specifically for black folk? And that the same type of things that black folk are asking for is being done for other folk by these Democrats. Anyway, the article went on to say adherence to the norm of Democrat Party support is ensured through a set of social rewards and penalties which recognize compliance and punish defection of racial group members. Like if you're a black Republican, what? Get out of the room. It's like, I guess that's like being a Dallas Cowboy in Philadelphia at the bar. You know what I'm saying? Eagles playing the Cowboys. You vote for the Cowboys. You're going to get a lot of head turns. Sure, collective action for the larger group interest is an effective strategy for leveraging political power, especially in a two-party system. A divided group minimizes the likelihood of responsiveness by either party. But a partisan voting bloc, blacks are positioned to push their issues onto the party agenda. If the Democrats fail to respond, to be responsive, blacks can threaten to withhold their vote by not turning out. I'm going to say that again. If the Democrats fail to be responsive, blacks can threaten to withhold their vote by not turning out. Newsflash, Democrats have not been responsive for damn over 8 years, maybe forever. I don't know. Maybe not since Kennedy and Johnson. Sorry, but this is how racialized social constraint maintains both black party loyalty and black political power. Well, if you're going to restrain somebody, you should be restraining them for not voting, for voting for one of these fools that ain't doing nothing for them, that's giving them they behind the kiss. That's what you want to restrain people from doing. You want to show them, you know, hey, this is what this guy's doing. This guy is doing nothing for you. Here's what you can get from this guy. And that's where you make your decision. Got a caller. Let me get the caller. 0036Q. Hello? Q, press number one. I'm going to take you off.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
All right, yeah. Yeah, I want to say It was all like.
You got to speak into whatever it is you're speaking into, because you sound very faint.
I'm in my car now. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but it's faint.
Okay. Now going back to that, the Civil War, the release, the proclamation, you know, that proclamation and stuff. This guy, I was listening to Word today. This guy was saying how the South was allowed to write the laws in regards to Reconstruction. Like, they wrote things in there like, man, a person can't be enslaved unless they commit a crime. And then they wrote up all those black laws, so that they could arrest all those black people and everything like that for being unemployed and, you know, congregating and all that kind of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it never seemed like it was never really, it was kind of helping, but not really helping. You know what I mean? Kind of like, we're going to help you out a little bit, so we're going to free you to just get out there and no one can tell you what to do, but that's it. No type of help for the people to get housing, food, or anything like that. You know? So I don't know. The only time they actually really had a law that was kind of helping us was like with that affirmative action, I think. And they were trying to help people, you know, to get ahead, like college and stuff like that. But other than that, I don't know. What other laws can they make to kind of help black people? You know,
They can make laws against people conspiring to create laws that are designed to hurt black people. And I'm going to get into that further on this show. They can make laws against that, which they should already have laws against that, because that's basically treason. If you're a citizen of this country and a political or anybody in so-called political representatives are conspire against you, that's treason. They're going against you. You the country. But we, you know, theoretically, I'm going to say that, because we know we don't run the country. We ain't create nothing. We ain't really, you know, we built, our ancestors may have built this country, but they did it under the duress of slavery, things like that. You know what I'm saying? So, but theoretically, it's supposed to be a country for the people, by the people. So if anybody plots against you, that's treason. You know what I'm saying? They got it in reverse. If you plot against them, you committing treason.
Right.
That's what it seems to me. That you have a better chance of you being taken to trial for treason than us taking them to trial for plotting against us as citizens of the United States. And I'm going to get to that, because you're going to see where this is. It's documented. And it's not a secret, anything like that. If you don't know, you don't know. But it's documented. I'm going to talk about a little bit of it tonight.
Yeah.
You done?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to go on. So I see black loyalty to the Democratic Party, but no black political power or political machine behind them. That is a problem. Power is the ability to do something. That something in this case is to create laws that benefit and protect the interests of black folk, not electing a political party or man in office who has no intention of representing you. That is a hell of a sight job. It shows how deprived black folks are when success is measured by traditionally electing someone to office and not by having a favorable impact on the legislative process. Obama was a black Democrat president who promised black folks, specifically President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris, follow suit. From NPR, W-H-Y-Y. The data suggests that even in the late as 1960, only about two-thirds of the African-Americans were identified with the Democrat Party. Now, two-thirds is a pretty big number. But when you compare it to today, the number hovers around 90%. So the Democrats really grabbed a lot of black people in their party with this the civil rights era. Because everybody seen that on TV. I guess the whole world saw it. Black people was getting knocked in the head, shot in the back at their homes, lynched. White folks was getting murdered and everything. It was terrible. So what happened? What did this guy say? This is what happened. According to Hitchens and Tufts University historian, Pino Joseph, Barry Goldwater is what happened. Barry Goldwater for Republicans becomes a metaphor for the Republican response for this revolution that's happening in the United States. The revolution was Freedom Summer, the period 50 years ago when hundreds of college students, most of them white, had journeyed to Mississippi to help black Mississippians become registered voters. The state's response to that integrated movement was swift and violent. Less than a month before the GOP met for this national convention in San Francisco, organizers Andrew Goodman, James Chaney, who was African-American and Mississippi-born, and Michael Schwerner have been kept on a dark road in Neshoba County. The only hint that they existed was Schwerner's charred Ford station wagon, right? The media attention that followed the men's disappearance royal, they say, the entire South. So everybody was up on this, right? It was heavily covered by the media. Their bodies would be found in early August, buried in a shallow earthenworks of a dam. So they killed these people just because they down there trying to help black folks register to vote. Vote didn't get power in the political system. So these Southerners are something else, man. They something else, man. You know. Then 2 weeks after that, after their disappearance, and mere days before the GOP convention opened, Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act into law. Pino Joseph said that the event outside of the GOP convention hall affected what went on under its roof. Supporters of the presumed front-runner liberal New York governor, Nelson Rockefeller, he's considered a liberal, were blindsided by the party's well-organized conservative wing, which nominated Arizona's Senator Barry Goldwater. His nickname was Mr. Conservative. Goldwater can be seen as the godfather or maybe the midwife of the current Tea Party. He wanted the federal government out of the state's business. He believed the Civil Rights Act was unconstitutional. Got to keep those N-words in check, right? Although he said once it was passed into law, it would be obeyed. But the states, he said, should implement the law in their own time. So imagine that as a law. You can't steal, but you're going to implement that law. Each individual is going to implement that law in their own time. Remember that kind of, imagine that type of thing. You know what I'm saying? African-Americans heard this message that was intended to be heard, which was Goldwater and the Goldwater wing of the Republican Party were opposed not only to the Civil Rights Act, but to the civil rights movement in large part as well. Threw the black people to the Democrats. Oh, that's like, oh, they back. They never went away. They still trying to get us, right? So that sent them into the arms of the Democrats. From the New Yorker, what's driving black candidates to the Republican Party? I just told you what drove them. So recently, they said the Republican Party has recently attracted a lot of black folks, more than they did since the Reconstruction era. Because, you know, during the Reconstruction era, that's what the black people was running in them. Oh, they was like they was, oh, the umbrella, right? Keep them out of the rain. Well, they are endorsing more black candidates than they have in the past 25 years. The Gulf, she argues, is exploiting a moment when the longstanding relationship between black Americans and the Democratic Party is weakening. And it aims to capitalize on everyday conservatism, right, among voters. It actually makes sense that in the aftermath of Barack Obama, right, with black people's level of support and warmth for the Democratic Party in decline and the belief among a small sect of African Americans that it is just as racist as the Republican Party, that actually frees some people up to actually vote Republican, she said. I don't know about that. If you think they're both just as racist, then you don't have a vote. Right? So, you know, that don't make sense to me. But you're going to vote for the person that gives you something. That's what makes you vote for the other guy. The other guy better be offering something. Some people realize that the Democrat Party is not doing anything for them. You have to be a Latino, illegal alien, Asian, some foreign country, or a member of the LGBTQ to get legislation passed specifically for you. Obama had the White House draped in the LGBT colors of the rainbow, but he wouldn't dare do the same with a red, black, and green flag. He and other Democrats passed legislation specifically for the LGBTQ, Latino, and Asian people, but no such thing for blacks. Claude Anderson stated affirmative action was written, he wrote it, right, specifically for black people, but applied to women, people of color, and minorities. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was rooted in the struggle of Americans of African descent to obtain basic rights of citizenship in the nation. African Americans led the charge and dominated the battlefield. Now everyone, particularly minorities, benefit from the Civil Rights Act. And they say that the African Americans, the quote unquote, saying that they're not percentage wise, they're not really doing that good for them, you know. U.S. Department of Health and Human Services said statute 18116A on June 5th, 2020, the Supreme Court held that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act 1964, the prohibition of employment discrimination based on sex encompasses discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. See that? Black people see you do something like, let's see, get something done like that. That's from the LGBTQ. And they are, their situation is arguable. Like, you know, if it's even, you know, what are we doing? That's still an argument even or around the world, actually. Democrats have long been proud to fight alongside tireless LGBTQ leaders and advocates from combating the HIV/AIDS crisis, hate crime prevention act, to sending hateful don't ask, don't tell policy to the dustbin of history. Passing the Equality Act twice since 2018 extends the protections of the Civil Rights Act to LGBTQ Americans, barring discrimination in employment, education, access to credit, jury service, federal funding, housing, and public accommodations. Passing the Global Respect Act, legislation to ensure that America offers no safe haven to those who violate the human rights of our LGBTQ family, friends, and neighbors around the world. Around the world, y'all. Republicans continue to wage an all-out assault on the safety and well-being on the LGBT community, from targeting trans children in Texas to bullying LGBT students in Florida. I ain't going to even get into that, what they're talking about right there. While 157 House representatives shamefully voted against upholding Americans' right to marry the person they love. Oh, that's very debatable stuff, and we know why, right? But look at what they did. You got to give it to them LGBTQ people. They are mostly united, or, well, united enough to get stuff passed by them. I don't know how they're doing it. But, man, what is the deal with black folk? This is proof that population size has nothing to do with getting legislation passed. President Biden's administration is reaffirming the fundamental dignity of every person, securing stronger health care protection for the LGBTQ Americans. The fundamental dignity of everyone is not quite accurate. It's more like the fundamental dignity of the LGBTQ. Biden must have sat and talked with somebody, LGBTQ, or representing the LGBTQ. I don't know if you remember, he didn't even talk to Ice Cube. Does the betrayal of the Democrat Party mean that black folks should vote Republican? I think not. Blacks should vote for whomever has black interests and support. That might be a Republican, Democrat, or someone, or something else. It seems blacks will forever be trapped into voting for the lesser evil. My sister says that should never be an option, simply because it is not an option. So-called race may not be the only issue that impacts on politics or politicians and voters, but it is one that can't be ignored. Oftentimes, I wonder, when is the good old U.S. of A. going to become the great country that it claims to be? Then I wake up. Appears to be is a country that in the midst of having its roots and success in racist and exploitative capitalist practices, somehow it manages to coerce, bribe, swoon, manipulate the diverse population, corral them into basically two political parties, and maintain control. That is evil genius. This is from Origins. They're talking about the Republican Party, African Americans, the real history. They say this is the real history of the Republican Party and African Americans. Founded in 1854, the Republican Party promoted African American equality for its first two decades. Abraham Lincoln and the radical Republicans, right? Good old Abe. In Congress, fought to end slavery and to give black men full citizenship. 1854. For that much, Bush and company can claim a worthy lineage. Bush is Republican, right? So I said to myself, let's not be blinded by why the Civil War was actually fought. Lincoln stated if he could, he would maintain slavery to save the Union. I mean, after all, who wants to go to war? In fact, before the Civil War, Lincoln only freed the slaves in the southern states, which he had no authority. Imagine that. You free the slaves in the part of the country which you have no power. People are telling you, giving you the middle finger, right? The war was fought to save the Union. Freeing the slave was a method of weakening the South, whose economy had drove the economy of the United States in the North and South. It's the pillar of the economy of this country. Cotton made them a world power. So the Republican Party got the political nod from black people because Lincoln is a Republican and they are the party that freed the slaves. Black didn't get the benefit of full citizenship until sometime in the mid to late 60s when the Civil Rights Act was passed, headed by then President L.B. Johnson. He was from the South. I was the vice president to Kennedy. I mentioned it already, right? So good old Lyndon Baines followed suit. The article went on to say, but as early as 1876, not 1960, as the Philadelphia conventioners suggested, the GOP party began to abandon black Americans, right? So, say what? Yeah. Ohio Republican Rutherford B. Hayes agreed to withdraw federal troops from the South in exchange for Southern Democrat support. So this is the Ohio Republican making a deal. This is politics at work here. You got to pay attention. Democrats seized power in the South and ushered in legalized segregation. Well, they already had that up north, right? When Bush touts his party's history, he does not seem to know that Republican advocacy of black equality was already waning by the early 20th century. Not even on the scourge of lynching did Republicans muster enough enthusiasm to take federal action. It was lynching black folks like it was legal, actually. I guess it maybe was legal the way they did it. All that lynching going on, black, all this murdering black folks and still murdering black folks today. Biden was quick to produce legislation to specifically protect Asians. You remember that? From the whitehouse.gov. They said that in its first week of office, President Biden signed a memorandum which established that it is the official policy of the Biden-Harris administration to stand up against racism, xenophobia, nativism, and bias. All federal agencies are to take steps to ensure their official actions mitigate anti-Asian bias and xenophobia, especially in the nation's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Woo! The memorandum also charged the Department of Justice with partnering with AA, which is Asian Americans, and NHPI committees, Native Americans right there, committees to respond to and prevent hate crimes of violence. So I'm taking it, that was his first week of office, and did he get, what percent of the vote did he get from those folks? Because I could have swore that guy said he had black folks back, and black folks rioting and, you know, back to that stuff they were doing in the 60s, marching down the street, police doing stuff to you and all that old nonsense. And then he went back to that kind of thing. It's like, this man said he had your back. It's white man. Say he had your back. They appointed a White House senator liaison to Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Island communities. That's the NHPI, right? Erica A., I don't know how to say her last name, M., was to serve as deputy assistant to the president and Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander senior liaison. Serves as a voice to advance the president and the administration's priorities. You would think that he would have a priority to do that type of thing for the people who had his back. The people that he said, if they didn't vote for him, they wasn't black. Biden. Black people let this old dude look like he's about to, like, any minute, you know. Are we letting him run a game on us? Helping to coordinate a comprehensive federal response to the rise in acts of anti-Asian bias and violence. Remember the Asian guy that shot the 14-year-old boy as he came into a store? Boy put the water bottles back, ran home, tried to run home, followed the boy, chased the boy, shot him in the back. So why is he chasing the guy? He doesn't have his, and the sheriff down there said there was no theft. So where's our legislation? because that's not the first time that happened. It happened another time, a black girl in an Asian store went there, and a lady accused her of stealing something she had in her backpack sticking out that she was getting ready to pay for. Girl put it back. Girl turned away. They argued. Girl turned away to leave. Lady shot in the back of the head. Where's our legislation? Where's the black folks' legislation for that? So I don't get it. Anyway, some of the stuff they mentioned was strengthening economic security and opportunity for Asian Americans and Native, the NHPI, I'm going to call them that, right? Addressing the concentration of poverty experience in many AA and NHPI communities. You would think Biden would be doing that for black folks, right? Addressing disparities in educational outcomes for AA. I'm going to stop saying it. This is off to them, right? Advancing climate and environmental justice for them, right? Promoting inclusion and belonging for all AA and NHPI communities by strengthening public awareness and education about them. Building a federal workforce where AA and NHPI public servants are leaders at the most senior levels of our government. Ensuring the AA and the NHPI communities are empowered and equitably served by the federal funding, grants, and contracts. That's what Biden did his first week of being in office. Black folks, all you, 90, 80% that voted for him? I'm just saying, take a look at it. Take a look at why you voted for this man and look at who he devised legislation specifically for. And I'm going to go as far as say not black folk. Yes, Biden did not recognize the black people were being targeted for violence or just disenfranchised in the good old U.S. today. Biden had black people's back, all right, in the sights of a bullet he put in it. Is that any way to treat your historically most dedicated supporters and voters? I go out on a limb and say, if you are black and vote for Biden again, you don't want anything from him. This is definitely an abusive relationship. Remember, Dylan Root, who murdered 9 black worshipers in a Charleston, South Carolina, in the 1915 mass shooting at Emmanuel AME Church? What about the teenage gunman entranced by a white supremacist ideology known as replacement theory, who opened fire at a supermarket in Buffalo on Saturday, right? Methodologically, right, shooting and killing 10 people because they were black, and injuring 3 more, almost all of them black. He was there to shoot black folk. And one of the deadliest racist massacres in recent American history, President Biden called for a thorough investigation and said there was no harbor for hate-filled domestic terrorism. This guy was arrested with an AR-15 in his hand. We got black people getting shot, reaching for something after they tell somebody their license, reaching for his wallet. One dude was shot. What are you reaching for? His wallet. And they shot him I don't know how many times in New York. Another guy had his cell phone shot in his backyard. We just got all this nonsense going on with black folks that Biden does not see a need for any legislation to address. But don't beat up on the Asian guy, right? Although House Republicans passed an anti-lynching bill in January 1922, their state counterparts wouldn't enact it. Heartland such as William Burrow of Idaho allied with Southern Democrats to kill the bill, arguing that it licensed federal interference with states' autonomy. So, federal interference is used as an excuse for Republicans to reject anti-lynching legislation. Based on that chain of thought, no state should be subjected to federal law. states have no problem accepting federal aid, though. Republican support for blacks started to change in 1876 in exchange for Southern Democrat support. Again, party unity is valued over supporting devalued, endangered folks. Yet Northern Democrats receive blacks fleeing the South. This is it. I know that may sound confusing, but you ever hear that thing called order through chaos? This is a perfect example of it. But this is the way the flow of the events that occurred. And you got to take what you can at that time. And whatever's happening at that time, you have to take advantage of what's going on at that time, not what you want to happen. Because what you want to happen not always happen. You take what you have and to form what you want to have, right? So I understand what they're doing, you know, but looking at it as, you know, America, the home of the brave, land of the free, that's some, you know what I'm saying? I just bleep myself. Anyway, as African Americans fled the South to the Northern states, Democrat political machines eagerly absorbed the newcomers. Republican machines, by contrast, right, in the North, right, reacted coolly when the black leaders sought to join their ranks. So they was rejecting the whole, wait a minute, right? So the black shift to the Democrat Party crystallized under President Franklin Roosevelt through FDR won just 23% of the black vote in 1932. He subsequently expanded that support with his relief policies. The depression of affected black Americans disproportionately, and programs such as the Civilian Conservation Corps and the Public Works Administration gave them much need added. He came to the aid of oppressed people. You know, here's some housing, you know, here you go. So they put something in to help black people again. So when you help people who are desperate, they are appreciative, especially black folks. To the extent that Republicans still champion civil rights, it was leaders of the now extinct liberal wing, such as Wendell Willkie and Thomas Dewey, who did so. Anti-government conservatives of Bush stripe the rank and file of today's GOP. So it started changing. You say even the Republicans' political agenda started changing with Daddy Bush. I think that's Granddaddy Bush. Okay, they increasingly trumpeted states' rights. You don't even tell me what to do. You don't tell me what to do. I'm going to do what I want to do with these people. By 1950, the Republican Party of Lincoln moniker was all but meaningless. The GOP's leader, President Dwight Eisenhower, testified before Congress against integrating the military and belittled the landmark 1954 Supreme Court decision that desegregated public schools. The hell with that. Racial liberalism within the GOP enjoyed its last hurrah with the 1964 Civil Rights Act. President Lyndon Johnson, right, and Northern Democrats finally resolved to enact a vigorous civil rights bill. But the legislation almost died because of a Senate filibuster by Southern Democrats. You heard that before? So Southern Democrats is something else. You can't go by the party. It's about what's inside of the man. So that's the lesson here. You got to look into the man if you want to make a decision about you. Don't go by he wearing a D on his shirt. Or he got an R. You got to go by what's coming out of his mouth and what he has done. Actually done, how he's been. So you look at his past, and we should be looking at how these guys voted, like these guys talking about right here, how they voted. They trying to vote talking about states' rights. That don't mean nothing. They ain't talking about states' rights. They don't nobody tell them what to do. They don't want to do what's right. So they put it on this whole federal thing. You don't tell us what to do. We have states' rights. That's all I did. That's a mask for saying, hey, look, we gonna do what we want to do with these black folks. You don't tell us what to do with them. Anyway, the foes of the 1964 law included such rising GOP stars as Senator Barry Goldwater and Texas Senate aspiring to get into the Senate, future President George H.W. Bush. I think that's Granddaddy Bush. I don't know if that's three generations down or one from the Bush that was the last Bush was president. I don't know which one it was. It could have been, probably was his daddy. So anyway, so these guys, Goldwater and Bush, foresaw that their future electoral success rested on Southern and Western conservatives. So those all sound like cold words for being racist. You know, just looking at the history, sounds like these guys is hating. You know, I'm not sure, but according to this information, sounds that way. In his 1964 presidential bid, Goldwater ran on Operation Dixie. That's like saying I'm a racist, which courted Southern whites and ceded the black vote entirely. The hell with the N-words. He lost badly. But 4 years later, the approach worked. Republican Richard Nixon won the election in 1968 on Southern strategy that stressed law and order and tap into white anxieties about black violence. Pay attention to that. That's historical, right? Claude Anderson warned us that there was a race war in politics. He stated the Constitution of the United States was the first affirmative action, and it was specifically written for white people. Black people were property, fifth amendment. If Reagan and Bush pursued white voters with coded racial appeals, that's what we're talking about. Triggering white folks' fear of black men by demonizing and criminalizing black men, right? Because what they used was they used an ad, George Bush, Michael Dukakis. In 1988, Bush tarred Democrat Michael Dukakis as soft on crime, famously using ads that featured a menacing black rapist named Willie Horton. I don't know if he's a rapist or not, from the way they, you know, back in the, you know, people, white women just yell something and they, you know, you can get strung up, you can go to jail for the rest of your life. So I don't know Willie Horton's story, but I'm gonna look that up for myself, see what happened with him. But anyway, so they kept using these things that triggered white folks' fear of black men by demonizing and criminalizing black men and calling all good white folks united against the black terror. I say these Republicans are hostile to black Americans. It's evil genius using racism and the image of black rapist Willie Horton to get votes. We have many more images today thanks to some black folks and social media. The thought of a black man raping or touching a white woman has ended the life of many black folks. Prosperous black towns have been destroyed for less. Goldwater ran for president with Operation Dixie. That is pretty straightforward stuff. And they say that black man is not targeted or oppressed in America. In 1968 is less than 55 years ago, 1968, right? Recently, we had a war on drugs. Justice Initiative says Nixon's domestic policy chief, John Ehrlichman, admitted that the war on drugs was designed to have precisely this impact on the black community. He said Nixon's creation of the war on drugs was to criminalize black people, amplify the presumption of guilt assigned to black people since slavery, and entrench the radicalization of criminology that began in earnest with lynching. All right? The Nixon campaign in 1968 and the Nixon White House after had two enemies, anti-war left and black people. They said they knew we couldn't make it legal to be against the war or black, but by getting the people to associate the hippies with marijuana and blacks with heroin, and they're decriminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities. We could arrest their leaders, raid their homes, break up their buildings, vilify them night after night on the evening news, in the media. Did we know we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did, he said. From the Associated Press, they said that radical disparities reveal the wars uneven toll. Following the passage of stiffer penalties on crack cocaine and other drugs, the black incarceration rate in America exploded from about 600 per 100,000 people in 1970 to 1,808 in 2000. In the same time span, the rate of the Latino population grew from 208 per 100,000 people to 615, while white incarceration rate grew from 103 per 100,000 to 242. This is a message to all those vested in crime and currently appearing on social media talking about gang activity, shootings, homicide, rape, robbery, and or, of course, prison life, right? Stay off Blight TV. Stop talking and criminalizing and indicting Black America, glamorizing Black trauma because it is hurting our image and people, demonizing us, devaluing us, making us vulnerable to the powerful ones, just as Nixon and his administration had planned in 1968 and his predecessors. We don't all live that way, but we all can live without it. Political parties or ideologies change like people change political parties. That is apparently why people change political parties. If you are going to participate in the United States arena, political arena, you will need to do more than your homework because these guys are vicious. Vicious chameleons, shapeshifters, and straight up demons when it comes to the political battlefield. Historically, both Democrat and Republican have threw Black people under the bus and backed up on them. But what do you expect? They are politicians. I wonder if they really change at all. It is truly a miracle that anything has changed at all. Black people need to stop looking for these guys, Democrats and Republicans, to save or preserve Black folks. Black folks should appreciate what political gains both parties have provided, but neither party deserves our undying commitment and support. They are either for us or a variation of the same thing. Remember, the law of nature is to protect yourself. If you cannot protect yourself, you cannot protect someone or something you love, need, or desire. Party affiliation and loyalty is a method of controlling and exploiting Black voters. Focus on political content, purpose that benefits you. After praying, get off your knees and on your feet because faith without work is dead. Take what you can use and be aware of what is being used against you. Together, unite. More power to the people. And I'm going to end the show on that note. Anybody have anything to say? You got like 2 minutes because I'm getting ready to get off the air. And I'm sorry to get on the soapbox, but damn, we in trouble. Really big trouble because I see us perpetuating the same methods of demonizing us ourselves. We are willingly participating in our own destruction, and these wolves are going to come after our necks. And till next week, y'all, I want to say each one reach one, each one teach one. I want to thank Blog Talk Radio, We Talk Productions, Mr. Kenneth Jones, the creator, my mom and my dad, all my supporters, callers, downloaders. Until next week, y'all. Peace out.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Deport from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.